Today's shiur is Masechta Ksuvos Daf Yotes. We will begin on Daf Yot Ches Amud Beis, six lines from the bottom, Tana Rabbanan. As we had discussed in the previous shiur, our Mishnah, as a continuation of the first Mishnah of the Perek, discusses the concept of Pesha Asa Pesha Hitta. And our Mishnah taught us that a shtar, a document, needs kiyum, it needs verification by the Edom or others to verify that this is the signature, that this is indeed their signatures. And our Mishnah taught us that if the only way we're able to verify that the signatures of the Edom is truly their signature is through the Edom coming and telling us it's their signature, but at the same time they indicate that there was a problem with the shtar, they believed. Peshasa Peshahitta. However, as we also learned in the previous year, it depends what they say, because under certain circumstances, what they say indicates that they were Rishoim. We have a rule, Ein Odom Mesem Atzmei Rosha, and therefore they're not believed under those circumstances. Says Agamar, Tan Rabbonin, Ein Monel Apostle Divar Remeya. Remeya says that the Edom that come and verify that this is their signatures have no right to disqualify the shtar. The Chum are in the money. And the Chum say that they are believed. Says the Gemara. Bishlam Rabbonin, the explanation of the Rabbonin, why the Edom have this ability to say that they were disqualified to be Edom and therefore disqualify the document, Ketamayu, is as we have been explaining. Peshasu Peshahitam. El Ramei Maitama. How do we explain Ramei? If we rely on the Edom, and they're the only source to verify their signature, why don't we say Peshasa Peshahitta? Says the Gemara, Bishlama Psuli Edis. We could understand if the Edom are saying that they were disqualified, and therefore the shtar is not acceptable. So we don't accept what they're saying, because we have a chazaka, we have a rule, Malva gufami kar medik dayik umichtim, that the malva is careful to make sure that only kosher edim sign a shtar. So if the edim say that we weren't kosher edim, they're obviously not believed. It goes against the chazaka. Ktanim nami. Similarly, if the edim came and said that they were ktanim, when they were minors, when they signed the shtar, they're not believed. Because again, we have a chazaka, what Shimon Bar Lakish taught us, Damar Rish Lakish, Chazaka, there is a Chazaka, that Ein Edom Chosim El Shtar, that a Shtar is not written, Elm Kain Nas Begadol. Unless there were Gedolim, only adults, and everybody's careful to make sure that the witnesses who are signing the Shtar are Gedolim. So therefore, if they say they were Ketanim, it's something we're not going to believe. And as Tosfos points out, actually, the Gemara use two different reasons why we don't believe them when they said that they were disqualified, and why we don't believe them when they were said ketanim. One was because malva gufami kar medik dayik, and the other one is chazaka ena edim choysim al shtar. He says really these two things are interchangeable, because they both really mean the same thing. What they mean to say is that somebody who prepares a shtar or has a shtar prepared on their behalf is careful to make sure that the edim are adults, careful to make sure that the Edom are kosher Edom. So why did the Gemara use different terminology, says Tosfos, for each one of these situations? So Tosfos says the reason is because the Gemara is quoting these statements as they were originally made. And the statement of Malva Gufami Kar Medik Dayik was made in regard to Edom Psulim. And the statement of Chazaka Ein Edom Chosim El Shtar Elm Kein Nas Begadol was said regarding Ketanim. So Gemara wanted to quote accurately the proper terminology for each situation, even though it's not necessary, because it's obvious that this is the halacha for each one of these situations, and these could be interchanged. And Rabbanan, obviously, who disagree with Rameya, hold that a Pesha Asa Pesha Hitter is so strong that even though there's a Chazaka, that everybody's careful that the Edom should be kosher Edom, everybody's careful that the Edom should be Gedolim, still the Pesha Asa Pesha Hitter is stronger. So how do we explain the machloikus of the Rabbanan Rameyah? So I saw the Mefarshim explain it very beautifully. And it goes back to something we discussed when we began learning the sugya of Pesha Asa Pesha Hitta. We said it's machloikus Rishonim, machloikus Ha'achroinim. What is Pesha Asa Pesha Hitta? Is Pesha Asa Pesha Hitta a migui? Or is Pesha Asa Pesha Hitta even more than a migui? It's even more powerful than a migui. We actually said that the Shita in our Mishnah suggests that it's Machloikus Rashi in Taisvis. That according to Rashi, Pesha Asa Pesha Hitta is more than just your average migui. And that Taisvis holds that Pesha Asa Pesha Hitta is a migui. If that's the way we have a Machloikus, perhaps we could say that's the Machloikus of Rabbanan and Chachamim. Because there's a rule throughout Shas that a migui does not work against a chazaka. So Rameya is going to consider Pesha Asa Pesha Hitta migui. And therefore, since in this situation we have chazakas working against this migui, chazaka ein edem chayitz mal shtar elm kein nas begodl mal veguf mikar medik dayik, therefore the chazaka is stronger than the Pesha Asa Pesha Hitta. On the other hand, the Rabbanan hold that Pesha Asa Pesha Hitta is not just a migui. Pesha Asa Pesha Hitta is much more than that. And even though a migui does not work against the chazaka, Pesha Asa Pesha Hitta can work and is stronger than a chazaka. And that's why in this situation, even though there's a chazaka that doesn't allow us to believe what the Edom say, the Pesha Asa Pesha Hitta is more powerful. However, ask the Gemara, even according to Rameya, that says we never believe the Edom, El Anusa Maitama, if the Edom come in and say that they were coerced, and it was a question of nefashis, that they had to do what they did, why don't we believe them? They're not saying that they did anything wrong, and there's no chazak against that, so why don't we believe them according to Rameya? Amar of Chizda, Ksav Rameya, this is a difficult line of Gemara to understand, Eidish Amrulam Chis Mushekar, that if Eidim were told, you have to sign a document that which is false, the Al Tahargu, and if not, we'll kill you, the Aloch is Yahargu Vayacht Mushekar. They should quickest let themselves be killed than to sign falsely. So, as most Mefarshim explain, so when these Edom come in, many Mefarshim explain, and they say that we signed the Shtar, even though it was a question of Sakonis Nefashis, they're Rishon. We go back to what we learned in the previous year, Ein Adam Meis Matzmei Rasha, and therefore, we don't believe them to say this. Obviously, this is a very difficult pshat, because, as the Gemara is going to say in a moment, and it's difficult, we have to understand a havamina of a Gemara also. It's difficult to even have a havamina that a person is supposed to allow himself to be killed just and not sign a shtar falsely. We know that there's a halacha that there are only three averis that are yahar gval yaver, of a desar gila rais and shvichas tamim. So what's the havamina of the Gemara? So the Ar Sameach says, again, difficult to understand, and he says this based on the Rosh, that a person is supposed to allow himself to get killed instead of signing a shtar falsely. However, says the Rosh, it's not such a terrible avera if he didn't let himself get killed. And therefore, that's how he views it. And that doesn't permanently disqualify the person. Says Dar Smeich, but at that moment that he didn't allow himself to get killed, says the Rosh, he was doing the wrong thing. So now when he comes and says, this is what I did at that time when I signed the shtar, it turns out that he's saying he did something wrong, and that's why we don't believe him. But still difficult, because how could you say he did the wrong thing? So most Rishonim explained the Gemara that of course, even in the Havamina, we understand that a person isn't mechuyev, isn't obligated to let himself be killed, just not to sign a shtar falsely. However, in those days, people were so serious about not swearing or not saying a lie or not signing to a lie that they on their own were maisa nefesh under those circumstances. So, yes, api halacha, if a person didn't do it, he didn't do anything wrong. But he did something that most people wouldn't do. So he's actually saying that I am not as observant. I'm not doing what everybody else does. So by saying that, he's essentially saying, I'm a Rasha. Everybody else would be ready to give up their life. I'm not ready to give up my life. And that's why he's not believed. Amalei Rava. we're going to get to that question. Amalei Rava. So Rava asks to him, Hashta. He doesn't understand. Ilu also kamon lemluchim. If this person would come to us to ask, should I sign the shtar force or should I let myself get killed? Aminu loy zilu chasoyim v'loy tekatlon. Allow yourself to be killed. Allow, sign and don't get killed. Because we know, damamar, ein lecha davish ayim b'fnei pikuach nefesh. There's nothing that stands in the way of pikuach nefesh. Only the three averus of avodas kacham gila raz v'shvicha damim levad. So hashta the chasumu. So the person followed what the halacha said. Aminu loy amay chasim usoy. So we tell him, you did the wrong thing. What did you say? You're washed for doing it. So Tosfos just makes an observation. From here we see that there's a shaila. The Gemara discusses in Masechet Avodah Zarah when the halacha is yarg val yavor by these three averus. Is it only befaresia or even betzina in public or under all circumstances? From here we see it's under all circumstances because the Gemara here is saying that under all circumstances by these three averus you have to give up your life, not under other circumstances. So we have to address Rabbi Gorelick's question. If we still need to understand Rameya. How, the way we understood Rameya is that even though the halacha did not require one to give up his life, Rameya was explaining, according to the Havamina, that people did give up their life. And if a person says, I wasn't ready to do it, he's essentially saying that I wasn't ready to do the right thing. So the question is, if you're not supposed to give up your life, it's not the right thing. So I saw that the Mefarshim want to suggest that this is really a machloikis of the Torah and the Rambam. Famous machloikis. The Torah says, as the Gemara just quoted, that the three averus, one has to be ready to give up his life. What happens if a person wants to give up his life for another avera? Wants to give up his life for one of the other averus rather than doing it. What's the din? So the Torah says a person is allowed to do that. If he wants to, he's allowed to. The Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says, Chas v'shalom. Jewish life is paramount. And he's not allowed to give up his life. That's not called being frum. And the way Rabbi Chanan attempts to explain this machlaikas is as follows. He says, everybody agrees, both the Torah and the Rambam, agree that if it's a situation of pharesia, where it's in public, and somebody is making we're being coerced to do an avera, even if it's not one of the three averas chamuris, but we're being coerced to transgress this avera because they want to prove that they're going to uproot the Jewish religion, everybody agrees one could be Maisa Nefesh. Why? Kiddush Hashem. Kiddush Hashem supersedes everything. And if a person has the opportunity to be Mekadei Shem Shemayim and will say, you can't force me, no one can force me to do an avera, everybody agrees that he's allowed to do it. Where is there a machloikus of the Torah and the Rambam? If it's betzina. The example of our Gemara. Eidim in a home, and they're being coerced to sign or they'll be killed. It's not befaresia. Nobody knows about it. Says the Torah, and that's maybe the Havamina of the Gemara, a person, Kiddush Hashem, doesn't only mean when the whole world sees. Kiddush Hashem is in the privacy of your home. And if you're saying, I'm not going to be Oivan Avera, because I want to be Mekadei Shem Shemayim, you're allowed to. The Rambam says, no. Kiddush Hashem is in public. In the privacy of your home, that's not Kiddush Hashem. And therefore, you're not allowed to give up your life. There's an interesting shaila that I saw. The Gemara says here, for Avodah Zarah, you're supposed to give up your life, not worship Avodah Zarah. So I saw an interesting shaila that was asked to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. There was a couple in Israel, a married couple, and the husband ran away and left the wife, unfortunately, as an aguna. Nobody exactly knew where the husband was. They knew he ran to Brazil. So there are people, there are good people, who try to help these women. So given that this person, this Rav, was aware that this husband was in Brazil, he traveled to Brazil to see if he could find a man and get a get for this unfortunate aguna. He put an ad in the papers. He didn't know where he begin to look. So he put an ad in the paper, in the secular press, with a picture of the man, saying this man left his wife in a terrible way, and if anybody knows where he is, please help me find them so we could get a get. A galach, a priest, a minister, saw this ad and recognized that this was the person that owned the supermarket in the neighborhood where he had a church, and made an announcement in his church that if this man will not give his wife a get, no one from the church, no one from the community is allowed to buy product, go to that supermarket. So the question is that called benefiting from Avodah Zarah? So Rav Chaim Kanievsky said that's not called benefiting from Avodah Zarah. Benefiting from Avodah Zarah means because you're benefiting from the Avodah Zarah itself. The fact that this individual happens to be a galach doesn't mean he's an Avodah Zarah. That's what he does. Not necessarily something that we do, but that doesn't make him not a human being. And when he acts as a human being ought to act, that's not called benefiting from Avodah Zarah, and it's something to be commended. So we need to understand Rameya. El Tamed Rameya, what is the reasoning for Rameya? Why, if the Adam said that they were a Anusim, don't we believe them? Says the Gemara of Huna Marav. If the loiva agrees that he wrote the shtar, and that's the situation here, explained the Mefarshim. The loiva is not arguing that the shtar wasn't written. There's a question on the qualification and the acceptability of the eidim, but the shtar was written, and the halacha is as soon as the loiva says that it was written, even though the Adam say they were disqualified, the shtar doesn't even need kiyum, doesn't need certification, and it's fine. So obviously, all the Rishonim asked the question, why? The Loiva could have said he had a migui. He could have said that it's a forgery. Why just because he admitted that it was written, does it automatically become acceptable when he could have had a migui? So some Mefarshim say, the fact that the Malva is holding on to the shtar is a very powerful proof that this is a good shtar. And it's not that easy to say that the shtar is not acceptable. Other Mefarshim continue on that line to say that the only time kiyum is required is when the loiva doesn't admit that the shtar was written. As soon as the loiva admits that the shtar was written, there's no need for kiyum. And the migui of that it's mezuyif is not a good migui. Why is it not a good migui? So there's a very fundamental need to explain what migui is all about. What does migui say? Believe me with what I said, because I could have said something better. But it has to be that the better taina is something I really would have said. Mezuyif, to say a shtar is forged, is something that people generally won't say, because shtars are generally not forged. So since it's not something that is generally said, even though halachically it would be a better taina, that doesn't give him the right of migui, and therefore, as soon as he admits that the shtar was written, it doesn't need kiyum. So even when the Edom come and say they are nusim, they're not believed. Gufa, continues the Gemara, Amar Rav Huna Marav, Moed v'shtar shekosvoy, if the loiva agreed that the shtar was written, ain't tzarich l'kayma, there's no halachic requirement for certification. Amle Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, Genuva genuva lamalach. Why did you have to say the halacha this way? Isvir lach Rameya. If you hold like Rameya, ema lach Rameya. I like the Mefarshim explaining the question beautifully. If Rav Huna would have come and said the halacha is like Rameya, nobody would accept it. Because we know that there's a machloikis between Rameya and the Chachamim, we follow the Chachamim. So what Rav Nachman was saying to Rav Huna, you're trying to act surreptitiously. And instead of quoting Rameya, and that will be a clear signal to all of us to know that's not the halacha, you just say it without attribution. How you allow to do it? So Rav Huna says to Rav Nachman, Omar hechi svirle. So how do you hold? Omalei, ki osl kaman ladina. If a shtar is brought to us to din taira, amrina lehu, we tell them, zilu kaimash duraychu, do kiyim, v'chus ladina, and then we could start looking at the shtar. So that flaw in the Chiddush HaRim, ask a gevaldige kasha. Rav Nachman had a complaint to Rav Huna, that instead of saying halach k'rameya, he said what Rav Meir said. And what's Rav Nachman doing? Rav Nachman should have said, halacha kechachamim. That's not what Rav Nachman says. What Rav Nachman says is, zilu kimush daraychu v'chusul adinu. What did he say that? He should have said, halacha kechachamim. So the flaw answers, the flaw and the Chiddush Urim give two answers that are almost the opposite of each other. The flaw says, usually, and we're going to discuss this with Shem tomorrow share, a din Torah cannot take place unless the Bali Din, the defendant and the plaintiff are there. So what's the halacha on Kim Shtaris? Could Kim Shtaris take place even if the live is not there? So that's what he was trying to teach us. Zilu Kim Shtaraychu. Kim Shkiyum, verification could take place even without the live there. If he would have said halacha kachamim, we wouldn't know that. On the other hand, the Chiddush HaRim explains, one would suggest that the only time Kim is required is if the live is saying there's something wrong with the Shtar. But if the live is not saying that there's anything wrong with the Shtar, perhaps Kim's not required. Tells us Rav Nachman, under all circumstances, makes no difference if the live is complaining or not. Zilu Kim Shtaraychu, Kim is required. That's why Rav Nachman said it this way and didn't just say Halacha Kechachamim. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Ha'omer, if somebody comes and says, Shtar Amon Huzeh. A Shtar Amon means the following. I want to borrow money from someone, and as we discussed in the previous year, the right thing to do is when you borrow money, you should have a shtar. So I know I want to borrow money from you, and I don't know if we'll have the ability to write the shtar when I actually need the money. So I ask you, let's prepare the shtar. I'm going to borrow $1,000 from you, and if I end up taking the money, the shtar should be valid. And that's what's called a shtar monet, based on trust, because right now I didn't get anything from you. So says the Gemara, Ha'oim shtar monet, if somebody comes in with a claim that's a shtar monet, ain't a naman. Ask the Gemara the common man, who exactly is making this claim? Ask the Gemara, Elam the common loiva, if the loiva is making the claim, pshita, kol kamine, of course, we're not going to trust the loiva, the borrower, to say that it's a shtar monet and be able to creep out of paying. And there's machlok for shayinim under what what circumstances is the Gemara discussing. Is it when their Adam's signatures are recognized? Then certainly the loiva is not believed, because we have an excellent shtar. Why should we believe the loiva? There's some rishonim that say that the Gemara is even referring to a situation where there is no kiyum, but that a loiva should come in and make up some sort of a story that this is a shtar amana and we should believe him. It's not something that would make sense. Ella says the Gemara to come a malva. If the malva says it, so what's the problem? Tavav abracha. He's admitting that this is not a valid shtar. What's the problem? El the Kamri Adam. It must be that the Adam are the ones that are claiming that this shtar is a shtar modem. Ask the Gemara, what is the circumstances? Edik sab yodim yotzim makam acher. If the shtar could be independently verified, shita d'loy mahemni. Obviously, we're not going to trust them because there's no pesha also pesha eter. On the other hand, v'ed eink sab yodim yotzim makam acher. And we need their verification. So we go back to the Mishnah. It's a Pesha Asa Pesha Hitter. A Mailoi Mehemni. So the Gemara says Simon Bash to represent the three people who give explanation of this halacha. The first explanation is Rava's explanation. Loilam the Kama Malva. It's the Malva that says it. And this represents the opinion of what we just learned from Rav Huna. Dom Rav Huna Marav. Mal Bishtasha Kosvoy. Once the Loiv agrees that he participated in the Shtar, we don't believe anything else he says, and there's no requirement for kiyum. Abaya Omer, loyim the common malva. It's the malva that says that this is a shtar mona. So we right away asked, if the malva is admitting that it's a shtar mona, to quote the Gemara, tava ola bracha, says the Gemara, it's referring to kikon shechav lacherim. Yeah, the malva is saying that I'm not owed the money. But the situation here is that the malva owes someone else money, and this represents what Rav Nosson teaches us, the Tanya Rav Nosson Omer. How do I know if I owe you money? Mana. I owe you $100. B'chaver, and you owe someone else money. How do we know that you could go directly to me? The Torah speaks about a sham gzeilis. Sham gzeilis refers to a situation where you accuse me of stealing from you. You then confront me, and I deny it, and I swear falsely, and then I admit that I did the wrong thing. So the halacha is that I have to give you keren, I have to pay you what I owe you, I have to add a chaymish, and I have to bring a sham, a carbon asham. But the Torah, when it speaks about this, says, V'noson la'asha oshimloi. Obviously, I should give it to the person I owe it. Why does the Torah have to add these words? To teach us that, let's say I stole from you, and you owe someone else the money, that I pay that other person, not you. That's what those extra words come to teach us. There's a machloikis wachroinim, haflaw and ponim yofais. The Karen, I certainly don't pay you if you have somebody you owe money to. What will be the halacha on the chaimish? Is the chaimish included in the shibudid Reb Nosson or not? The haflaw says it is, the ponim yofais says it isn't. So that's the case here. The malva is being a tzaddik. He's saying it's a shtar amona, but he's not being a tzaddik on his own cheshbon. He's being a tzaddik on someone else's cheshbon. That's why we don't believe him. So the tzois and all the mefarshim ask the obvious question: what did the shibudid Reb Nosson teach us that we don't know? Of course, if I owe you money and you owe someone else money, that you have a right to. You have the halacha is that everything you have, not only all the cash you have, but all of your receivables are mortgaged to the people you owe. So what's Reb Nosson teaching us? What's the Torah teaching us that's a chiddush, that we need a special limud? So one teretz that the Rishonim suggest is that shtaris is not considered real property. Shtaris is not considered real property. So it's not something that's mortgaged. So if you have an IOU from me to you, that's not considered something that's mortgaged to your creditor. That's the shibud Reb Nosson says, it is considered mortgaged. Another teretz, which is really the teretz that everybody works with, the Ritva says this teretz, the halacha is, if I owe you money, so you could come and say, you know what, I forgive you, you don't have to pay me. Shibud Reb Nosson says, you could only forgive me if I owe you money and you owe no one else money. But if you owe someone else money and forgiving me, you're not being nice on your own account. You're being nice in someone else's account. So the halacha, the shibudid Reb Nosson teaches us is that you can't forgive a debt when you owe other people money. Another pshat the Ktzai says is that let's say you have cash. Big chiddush, the Ktzai says. You have cash to pay up your debts. But I owe you money. And you could force me to pay you property. Not a person you owe money to, he would prefer a piece of land over cash. So even though you have cash to pay, Shibudid Reb Nosson teaches us that your debtor could come to me, your creditor could come to me and say, since you owe my debtor money, give me the property and skip over getting cash that the debtor has. Another pshat, the Ktzais wants to suggest, and we'll end with this pshat, even though the more pshatim, is the Ktzais says usually when we look at a mortgage, we look what came first. Did the debt come first or the mortgage come first? Because the only things that could be mortgaged are debts that you have or properties that you have at the time of the loan. So let's say you owe someone money. And so at that time, everything you have is mortgaged to your creditor. Something that you're going to get later is not mortgaged. Now, I write you an IOU for whatever reason afterwards, so that should not be mortgaged. Teaches us the Shibudid Reb Nosson that even though it wasn't there at the moment when the debt was created, Shibudid Reb Nosson says that it's still owed to your creditors. Rav Ashi has another way of explaining when Shtar Monis said why it's not believed. Loim Ram the Kamri Adam. It's the Adam that said it was a Shtar Mona. And it's referring to a situation where we can't independently verify their signature. But we ask the question, so if so, why are they not believed? Says the Gemara Rav Kahana. The Amr Rav Kahana, Ostel Adam, Shiish Shtar Mona B'Tech Pesai. A Shtar Mona is something wrong. V'shim Shnemar, Al Tashkein Bo'alecho Avlo. You're not allowed to have in your house something that's wrong. Vomer of Sheshis, Berader of Edi, Shmamin of the Rav Kahana, Edim Sh'omra Amonah Yudvarenu. If Edim say that what they wrote is an Amonah, ain't Amonah. They can't be believed. My Tama, Kivin the Avlahu, it's an incorrect Shtar, Avloi chasmi. So it goes back to something we discussed at the beginning of the shiur and in yesterday's shiur. By Adam saying that they participated in the shtar amona, they're essentially saying they were rishoyim. Ein adam meis matzmi rosham. And there's a very fundamental machloikus in explaining ein adam meis matzmi rosham. Some rishoyim say, this way Rashi seems to learn, at least that's what Rabbi Chanan says, then ein adam meis matzmi rosham is only regarding testimony. That when testimony is given, if by my giving testimony I say I'm a Rosha, and that should disqualify my testimony, there's a rule that we don't accept that testimony if it'll make you a Rosha. Others explain, ein adam meis matzmi rosha is only, a person has no right to make himself a Rosha. How could you come and say, the Torah doesn't believe you when you say you're a Rosha? So ask the Noid Behuda, that's the way the Rishonim say, that's what they Tosfos learns. There's halacha as follows. If two Edom walk in and say that I ate chaylev, I ate dam, so the halacha is, if I ate it b'shogig, I'm mechayev to bring a carbon. If I ate it b'mezid, I don't bring a carbon. The halacha is, I could say to Besdin, yes, they're saying the truth, but I don't bring a carbon because I was amazed. I ain't other mezid matzmi rosha. Why is he believed? Says the Noida Behuda, no matter how we explain ain't other mezid matzmi rosha, ein adam meis matzmi rosha is only when it affects others. When ein adam meis matzmi rosha, I'm trying to do tshuva. So the reason I'm saying that I ate it b'mezid because I don't want to bring a carbon I'm not supposed to bring, it'll be chulin b'azara, there we don't apply ein adam meis matzmi rosha, and the person would be believed. But here, by the adam saying that they signed in the shtar amona, they're saying that they did something wrong, and they're not believed. Amar b'shu ben Levi, osla adam shiyisha shtar Perur b'teich b'isai. A person's not allowed to have in his home a shtar perur, a paid up shtar. Why? Because again, it only could bring to trouble that'll be reused when it's not allowed to. Mishum shenemar, al tashkein b'alecha avlo. You're not allowed to have in your home something which is wrong. B'marovim mishmei d'rav amri, im ovim b'yotcha, if you have something that's wrong in your possession, hachukeyu, leave it, take it away. What does it refer to? Zer shtar mona v'shtar pasim. What is a shtar pasim? A shtar pasim means like this. A person wants people to think he's rich. So how do I show that I'm rich? I have a lot of receivables. They're not true. But when somebody looks at my books, he sees, oh, he's a wealthy man. Look at all these receivables. If it's not true, you're not allowed to have in your hand. V'atashkin ba'olach avlo. What are you not allowed to have in your home, zeh shtar perua. So Tosfos explains, im oven biyotcha means that something was wrong from the beginning. A shtar amona, shtar pasim, are inherently wrong to have in your house. A shtar perua is not wrong. When the shtar was written, it was a fine document. It only became a problem later on. That's why im oven means something that was from the beginning wrong. That's a shtar amona, shtar pasim. Vatashke ba'alocha avlo, Tosfos says, refers to something that became wrong later on. That refers to shtar perua. Mandam shtar perua, the mandam says that a shtar perua, which, as we just explained, when it was originally written, was 100% fine. Still, you're not allowed to have in your home. Koshken shtar mona, certainly shtar mona, there was never a right to have such a shtar, is improper to have. Mandam shtar mona, the mandam says shtar mona, but could be shtar perua. Loy, there's nothing wrong with having a shtar perua. Why? The zibn de mashle a pshiti de safra. As the Rishonim explained, if we have a loy vada malva, and a shtar is written, who has the obligation of paying the cipher? The obligation of paying the cipher is on the loyva. Obviously, he's the one that's having benefit. Sometimes the loyva nebuch is so poor, he can't even pay for the cipher. So he asks the malva, could you pay for the cipher? And the Malva says, yes, but you have to pay me back. And that's exactly what happened here. There was a shtar written, I'm the loiva, you're the Malva, and I couldn't pay, unfortunately, to the cipher. And I paid you back the shtar. I paid you back the entire loan. But I still owe you the money that you laid out for the cipher. So the Mar is saying that there's nothing wrong with you holding the shtar. Because until I pay you that, you didn't do anything wrong. That's how Tosfos says. But so according to Mandam, that there's something wrong with holding on to it. What did he do wrong? So Tosfos says, we're concerned that after I pay you back the few dollars for the cipher, you'll forget to rip up the shtar. The Ran says, a very bechiddush, the Ran says that even if I paid you up the loan, and I did not pay you up what I owe you for paying the cipher, you're still not allowed to hold on to the shtar. Why? Says the, so the Mefarshim explained the Ran very nicely. That the Ran is saying, the loan document only refers to the loan. I maybe owe you money for the cipher. Maybe we should write another document for that. But to connect the two, according to the Ran, they may not be collected. Continues the Gemara. Itmar. Sefer Shenemuga, a sefer, and we'll discuss in a moment what that means, that's not written properly. Omer of Ami. Ad lamed yoy mutal shoysoy. For 30 days you're allowed to have it in your home. Bikan ve'elech osala shoysoy. Afterwards, you're not allowed to leave it in your home. Mishim shenemar, atashkein ba'alocha avlo. You're not allowed to keep something wrong in your home. Why is 30 days? So I saw two pshatim. One pshat is because the Gemara uses the word tashkein. We know that a person is not considered living anywhere until 30 days. That's what halacha is. If somebody rents a home, he's only mechuyev to put up a mezuzah after 30 days. That's why, till 30 days you could keep it, afterwards not. Another pshat that I saw is al. What is al? Lamed Aleph, 31. Until the 31st day, you could have it. Al, when it gets to day 31, you're not allowed to have it in your possession. That is a very big machloikis, the Rishonim, the Achroinim, all discuss what does the Gemara refer to when it says a Sefer Shenemuga. Some Rishonim say it means a Sefer Torah. Other Rishonim say that includes all of Tanakh, not just a Sefer Torah. What is the basis of that machloikis? We'll go one machloikis at a time. So they say that the basis of that machloikis is a Sefer Torah is something that is read in public. So there we have to be careful that it should be perfect. Tanakh, Nach is not generally read in public, so that's why we don't have to be so careful. Others say you're not allowed to have anything that's incorrect, and it makes no difference if it's read in public or not read in public. What is pshat that it's incorrect? Again, we have a machlokes. Some rishonim say anything that's incorrect. If it's not 100% kosher, you're not allowed to have it. Others say that no, it has to be a word missing. Rav Akiva Eiger says la halacha, it makes a difference if the mistake is such a mistake that if this pasuk were read, it would change the meaning of the pasuk, you're not allowed to hold on to it. If it's something that doesn't change the meaning of the word, then it could, this halacha doesn't apply. But now the later Rishonim and the Achroinim say that this halacha is not limited to just Tanakh or Sefer Torah. It also includes all of the Svarim. In fact, all the Gemaras and the Achroinim, everything that we have, Shulchan Aruch. And in fact, the Paiskim say, why didn't the Rishonim include it? Why didn't Rashi say it? Because in those days, that the only Svarim that they really printed and they had were Tanakh. But certainly, any Sefer that has a mistake in it should not be kept. In fact, I saw certain Paiskim that are more machmer on a Shulchan Aruch than they are on a Sefer Torah. Because nobody's going to paskin a Shaila from a Sefer Torah. But you will paskin a Shaila from a Shulchan Aruch or from a Sefer Halacha. And therefore, you have to even be more careful on those Svarim than on Svarim that we're not going to use. So the halacha is that it has to be corrected. And otherwise you're not allowed to have it. But we know that in many shuls, there are Sifrei Torah in the Aron HaKodesh that are not kosher. So the Paiskim will say that if it's obvious, first of all, we have the Pesach that we just said that we don't really rely on a Sefer Torah to halacha l'maisa. Moreover, if it's obvious, the Binyan Tzion says this in the Tshuvas, if it's obvious that this is not a kosher Sefer Torah, usually we put the gartel on the outside, then even it does, you're allowed to hold on to it even past the 30 days. The Rabbeinu Yehuda Chosid says in the Sefer Chassidim, just like you're not allowed to keep in your home a Sefer Torah or Sforim that have mistakes in it, a person also has to be careful what kind of people he has in his home. You have to be careful who you invite to your home, who your talmidim are, al tashkin ba'alecha avla. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Nachman, Eidim shomer mona hayedvareinu. If Eidim come and say that this shtar is a shtar mona, ain't a mona. How about, says the Gemara Maidahid Vrenu. They say that this shtar we wrote, but it was done under duress. There was a notification given by the loiva that this shtar is being done under duress. Ain't an amonim. They're not believed. Maber of Ashamar. Amonahid Vrenu. Ain't an amonim. The takan not believed. Because ain't Adam Mason Matsmarasha. Nobody should participate in this. Maidahid Vrenu. On the other hand, if they say it was Maidah and amonim. My tama, what's the difference between a mona and my dog? High nitinly kosev. My dog, the way the Mepharshim explained, I'm supposed to be part of. This, I see this loiva being coerced to write a shtar that he doesn't owe the money. So this is the way I can help him. And that's why, by them saying it, they're not saying anything wrong. The high loiva nitinly kosev. A mona, as we just explained, there's never a halachic right to write it, and therefore I shouldn't have participated. By my name, Rav and Rav Nachman. So Rav asked Rav Nachman the following shayla. Tanai hayud vareinu. What happens if there's a shtar, and the shtar says, Ruvein Shimon, whatever money, but the Edom come and say, yes, this is the shtar, and this is what we signed. However, we also know that there was a stipulation attached to this deal. What's the halacha? Maidah v'amana. When we speak about Aram Maido or Amana, Hainu Tam de Ka'akwele L'Shtara, they're saying that the Shtar is inherently disqualified. For Hainam Ka'akwele L'Shtara, because if the stipulation wasn't followed, then there is no transaction. Aydilma Tanai Masachritihi. Saying that there was a Tanai doesn't inherently disqualify the Shtar. It's just saying that there was another outside stipulation. But nobody's saying that there's something wrong with the shtar. The shtar is a perfectly fine shtar. And in fact, there are some Rishonim that explain the Gemara, that the Gemara is suggesting that we should believe the Edom when they say Tanai Hayud Vareinu, even if we could verify the shtar without them. Most Rishonim don't learn that way. Most Rishonim say that the Gemara is going here with a Pesha Asa, Pesha Hitter, and only we rely on the Edom for verification. But some Rishonim want to suggest that since they're not saying that there's anything wrong with the shtar, there's two separate testimonies they're saying. One is they're saying that the shtar is 100% fine, but one is saying that there was a tanai. Is that considered inherently disqualifying the shtar or not? If such a shayla were to come to you, we say that the Edom are believed to say there was a tanai, the chusla dina. And until then, the shtar should not be used. Ask the Gemara another shayla. Edom and Tanai ve'edom and Tanai. We have the two Edom. They're both coming and saying, these are our signatures. The one Ed says there was a Tanai attached to this transaction, and the other one doesn't say that. What's the halacha? Omra Papa. Tavai b'shtar ba'ayuk misadi. Both of them are testifying that this is a good shtar. V'hai dekom Tanai. The one that's saying that it was a Tanai. Hav lechad. So the shtar is a good shtar. With two Edom. So it's considered as if we have two Edom saying that the loiva owes the malva the money. The havelay, the hayda come a tanai, and we only have one witness indicating that there was a tanai. Havelay chat, so he's one witness against two. And the halacha always is, vein dvar v'shalachim v'makam shnayim. Maskel of Ravun Abreid of Yeshua, ask Ravun Abreid of Yeshua, if this is indeed the halacha, yochafil tovai nami. So what's the difference of one against two? Even if both of them say that there was a tanai. If we say that as soon as they verify that this is their signatures, that makes the shtar 100% kosher, so, and nothing can be added, so why, even if both say there's a tanai, there's a stipulation, are they believed? Elam Rinan. What are you going to say? Hani l'meka sadasuka so. You must hold that saying there's a stipulation is like saying that the shtar is inherently flawed. Hani nami l'meka sadaika so. And therefore, it should make no difference if one says a tanai or two say a tanai. According to your line of reasoning, they should not be believed. However, says the halacha, hilchos karfuna b'rei d'Rishua, that if Edom say there was a tanai, the Edom are believed. Because as Tosfos explains, a Tanai is not considered inherent to the shtar. A Tanai is considered an outside issue that doesn't inherently flaw the shtar. And they believe because they're two separate testimonies. Obviously, very connected, and the halacha is whether it's two Edom that say it was a Tanai, or even if it's only one Edom that says a Tanai, that shtar cannot be used, even though the Edom are verifying that this was indeed their signature.
Yeah.